Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with my very good friend, Anthony Ambagnano. And we're going to be talking about breathwork and the power of working with the breath to understand and reconnect the fragmented disconnect parts inside of ourselves. To give a little bit of Anthony's background, Anthony is a visionary thought leader, breath expert, and founder of the internationally accredited breathwork school, Alchemy of Breath, which is a 100,000 person online community dedicated to evolving collective consciousness. He currently lives in Italy, where he co-founded Alchemy School of Healing Arts, ASHA, with his wife, Amy. And ASHA supports breathwork, holistic practices, sustainability, growing food, and building community. Anthony, welcome back. I see your name in my diary. It gives me a little smile. I think I get to hang out with Anthony for now. So I'm happy to have some time. Thanks for being here.
That's so cool. That's exactly what I thought when I was coming up from a class I was just giving to come here and do this. Yes, this is an easy one. It's nice.
Well, I shall hope to continue it to feel that way as we go through. So maybe for people which are maybe new to, they've seen the word breathwork and maybe they have an idea of what it is, but let's just give a little, before we come into the sort of the frame of the interview, let's just give some context to breathwork, to what it is and why it can be so impactful.
I've been doing this for decades, and what is the definition of breathwork? I remember being on the board of the IBF, the International Breathwork Foundation, and we were trying to work out in one sentence, what is this? How do you describe something so massive, crucial, and paradoxical in one sentence? Okay, I'm going to give it a go. Breathwork is the awareness of how we breathe in different circumstances, and then the opportunity to change our psychological or physical condition by manipulating the breath and using it in different ways. So that's my definition for today. Essentially, it's the thing that we forget about the most easily, and it's the one crucial ingredient in our life. You know, we can fast for 40 days and 40 nights, but we cannot hold our breath for that long. So I consider it the most essential thing we have. And it's also the only thing that we can pay our attention to that is actually autonomic. It will work on its own, but we can also give it our attention and control it. And that makes it very, very significant and very special.
One of the things that's also, I think, a helpful entry point to really understand this is for people to notice when they become dysregulated, be that anxious or fearful or whatever, that if they just notice their breath, that's one of the places that you can immediately see that shift.
Exactly. I have a client that I'm working with that had a very damaging experience with a plant medicine. He's a young boy, he's about 33, and he took ayahuasca, and he called me up and he said, "I'm desperate, I'm having dark thoughts." And I said, "Well, what are they?" And he said, "They're about killing myself and maybe killing my girlfriend too." And I said, "Okay, let's start with the breath, because that's what you're going to need to work your way through this. So are you willing to commit to me that each time the dark thoughts come, that you'll go into this breath pattern?" And I shared a breath pattern with him. And he now sends me a WhatsApp message every day, and the thoughts are calming down. And now the nervous system is beginning to regulate again. It's taken 9 days, something like that. He's had one attack of these thoughts in those 9 days. And prior to that, it was happening several times a day. So he's definitely improving. And we're now getting to the point where we can do some work on the substructure of his belief systems and other things that he created as a young man. But it just shows you the power of the breath. And I think one of my favorite quotes is that emotional leadership, the definition of emotional leadership is to take a breath when you don't want to. Just that ability to really create the space.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. It just got me thinking as well around, there's working with the breath to react, like what you just described with this young man of something's coming up and learning to work with the breath differently to find balance. But of course, There's also using breath work as a practice, which is in a way, not necessarily preventing, but at least sort of setting, optimizing, let's say, how we're functioning. So when we do have those impacts and challenges in life, we're able to respond in a different way.
Absolutely right. So there are several ways of working this, but my general approach is to use the breath as a response instead of a reaction to a trigger that might be awakening an old trauma that we've not resolved. And then also working on the baseline, making sure that our general state of being is one where we've created sufficient intimacy with the breath and what it can do for us, that it becomes a daily practice, just a simple little 3 minutes a day, three times a day, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out through the nose, very, very, very simple. And then after a week, it becomes your go-to breath. All of a sudden, if you feel any level of stress or activation, that's the breath you go to. After 3 weeks, you end up doing it unconsciously. It's become a new habit. So you end up living your life that way. And it's just such a simple little gift, but it actually changes everything. And that then gives us the ability, I think what it does is it creates resilience. So instead of that knockdown when that trauma is reawakened, we've now got our own medicine on board and we can actually use it ourselves.
So let's bring trauma now into the conversation a little bit. And so in a way, there's different frames or labels or ways to understand trauma. So I'm interested within the lens of breath work and the wider body of work that you teach, how do you see trauma within that?
Well, there are two aspects, I think. There's the physiological deposit of trauma that exists in our body. So, for example, trauma, TRE, trauma release exercises, combined with breath work are a great way to allow the body to go into involuntary shakes and trembles, which are the discharges that were not achieved at the time, usually, of a trauma. So that's very healing. And then there's the psychic aspect of the trauma. And I think, again, one sentence, sort of the headline of it all is that, wow, when we got traumatized, we lost our breath. That's when we lost our breath. So what if the conscious use of our breath is taking it back to where we once lost it? And that's a thesis, but I've also seen it working for so many years that it goes beyond the conscious mind. It reaches deep into the subconscious mind. And there's just that act of breathing consciously is tremendously healing to those places where all the other beers can't reach, or whatever it was that they said in that advert. It gets to the nub of the problem. And that alone brings a sense of ease and release.
One of the things that also happens when we experience trauma and we lose our breath is there's also a fragmenting or fragmentation that can happen. And in a way, one of the difficulties is that as we become fragmented, we often don't then recognize these different places, and there can be a disowning, there can be an over-identifying. So maybe speak a little bit to that, and then we can explore how working with the breath can help bring us back to more wholeness.
Yeah, thank you. This reminds me of an analogy that I used once, where you walk into the Albert Hall or some magnificent concert hall, and you're there early, and the musicians are on stage and they're practicing and they're making sure all their instruments are tuned, and it sounds like a right mess, right?
It's like it does, yeah.
Each person's concentrating on his instrument, and then all of a sudden the conductor walks in. And they fall silent, and he raises his baton. And then the minute he moves, the sweetest, heart-rending music can come out because of the orchestration. And I see those fragments as our inner orchestra, and that we are not used to the role of conductor. Actually, what happens to those fragmented parts that we've necessarily cast aside because they're too uncomfortable to feel? We don't live in a culture that encourages the flow of feelings, we'll do anything we can, we'll grab at almost anything to stop having to feel as a culture. So the ability to feel and the ability to reclaim the choice that we lost during that moment of trauma is the best way that we can reach out to those fragments and initiate conversations. And I'm sure some of you are familiar with internal family systems, Dick Schwartz's work. I've developed something much more simple called the bridge, which is a way of creating a bridge over which these fragmented parts can come back. And it's a sort of semi-hypnotic, but a deep state of focus that we use in order to create a retrieval practice that we can then use for ourselves time and time again. I think the point is, and the problem is with these fragments, is that they don't talk to each other. They are sitting there festering in their own misery, and usually for reasons that we're blaming the outer world, we're forgetting that there's actually something we can do about this. And so what could be more empowering than, wow, grabbing the wheel, and this is where we get to be the author of our own life instead of letting someone else write the book for us. You know, we can really move into a role of the rescuer of those parts of ourselves instead of the ignorer. And I think that's a really important moment in our human awakening, when we can reclaim our ability to respond from a situation that we just did not have a choice. And like you said yourself, it's not your fault. And now you have an opportunity.
What are some of the ways that we can recognize that fragmentation playing out? Because I think it's one thing for people to understand it as a concept, and it's another thing for people to be able to witness it and recognize it in their own felt experience and also in their behaviors. And so if someone has fragmented parts, or they have elements that have sort of become disconnected, how might that present, or how might they be able to start to recognize that?
Great question. I think overwhelm is one, you know, classic. That's probably 50-60% of the time is a sense of overwhelm. I think also blaming other people is a sign of something inside that definitely needs repairing, reconnecting. And I think actually in our normal speech, we do use the term, oh, part of me feels really rejected by what you just said, or gosh, part of me gets really happy when I think about going to the movies with my kids. You know, so we do use the term, but we don't perhaps pay enough attention to it. And I think the overwhelm and the blame and the stickiness of this, that we believe that when we're activated or triggered, that all of us is present and responding to a situation. The tragic ridiculousness of it is that it's a part of us that's pulling our puppet strings. And you know what that feels like when you're in a situation and you're going to say something and you know you shouldn't, and it's cheap and unkind, and it's just going to escalate the situation, and you just can't stop the words coming out. And I think that's when we're under the control of a part of us that is just desperately wanting our attention, and that's how it's going to get it.
It's also, I was laughing as you were saying that, because I was thinking about a recent experience, that it's amazing how seductive those parts are, right? You know, it's like those moments where you just you know that what you're saying is just, it's unkind and it doesn't reflect the truth. And yet the way we sort of justify it and rationalize it, and I know what can happen in me, it'll typically be when I'm sort of physically and emotionally very drained, and then I feel like there's too much I need to attend to. And then, you know, I'll get a narrative, you know, it'll typically be with my wife that it will happen. And the first two or three times I'll step back from the edge, and then I'll take my kind of attention will slip, and then it will come out. And yeah, it's like the moment the words are leaving my mouth, I know that I wish I wasn't saying it. But yeah, it just strikes me how in those moments, just how kind of much we believe the narrative, even though we know it's not true.
Well, it's not really the frontal lobe that's talking, is it? It's the, you know, the whole survival system back here that's like, you know, I'm going to I think another fine example is, have you ever read an email and then it's activated you so much that you write back? You know, you're so convinced you're right, and you know you could wait 24 hours, and you know you've told yourself it's much better to sleep on these things, as you contribute to this slow and inevitable train crash, and how easy it is for us to do that. I think these are all signs of being out of control and being out of, more importantly, out of communication with these parts of ourselves. And I think the other tragedy of this is that, gosh, well, I mean, you look at the world stage, there was these debates they have, for example, these political debates they have for elections. And it's like a bunch of seven-year-olds trying to get points, you know, and a bunch of little unhappy egos trying to gain at someone else's loss. There's no one home. All the fragments have been left outside the room, and there's this little thing that's left, that's this composite of how I've learned to be in order to navigate in a very brutal world. And that's good enough for now. And I can talk faster than you, so I'm going to be okay. But that lack of presence is what contributes to even more anxiety, to depression, because only a quarter of us or 10% of us is here, and we become like little robots going and activating each other and reacting. And of course, reacting means let's do it again. Let's not respond. Let's react. And it just gets worse. So this is urgent. We need to do this as individuals. We need to do this work as soon as we can, because then that informs our wives. And, you know, when she says something that activates me, and I can say, wow, I just need a breath, because that was powerful, what you just said. And then I take that breath, I go, wow, I can feel like my little boy inside feels like maybe you're going to leave me or something when you say that. And what happens to that other person? All of a sudden, they hear the echo of their own words. They see your vulnerability. They're not bad people. They want to be kind, and they can see that, oh, there is a way to be kind. So when we can change that in ourselves, I think we become a really important and inspiring influence on other people.
So if one finds themselves in a situation like I think that email one's a really good one, because I think we all know that place. And one finds himself in that place, and they can, you know, the activation's there, and the kind of righteousness and the self-justification and all of that that comes in. How could we use the breath in that situation?
Well, first thing, start using it today, because you know that situation is going to come again. So but step one is to notice the way you breathe in any given condition. Are you upset? Are you happy? Are you tired? Are you exerting energy? Notice what your body does with your breath. The more you notice that, the bigger your palette of colors gets, so you can create the painting that you want. And that's number one. That's step one. Step two is to create intimacy with your breath. And I know this sounds a bit boring. Okay, we're going to take 10 breaths together. And now, God, when's that going to end so I can get back to work, or I can get back to that email, you know? But
get back to savaging this person that needs to help.
Yeah, exactly. But that ability to create that as a pattern in your life is building your resilience, and it's building your intimacy and your awareness of the breath. And then when those conditions, when those situations occur, you're much more likely, as I said, to go to your breath, or if you've practiced for 3 or 4 weeks, to come from your breath, because you'll realize that, wow, this is actually my best friend. This is more important to me than any other human being in my life. This is what nourishes me, and it's bigger than human consciousness. We get inspired, we get spirit, we import spirit when we breathe. So if I want to bring more info to the mix, that's what I need to do. I need to make my palette larger so I can paint the picture that I really want. I want to have the outcome that I really want. And then I think when the incident occurs, we just need to be honest. I need to take some breaths. I was talking to someone about this morning, and she said, well, look, I'm in my job, and my boss comes here and says, look, I told you to do this by 10 o'clock and you didn't do it. You're going to lose your job. I'm not going to tell her I need to take a breath. And I said, well, why not? Why not take a breath and then consider writing your resume so you can get a different job?
And maybe tell your bosses they can prep as well. In a way, also, it strikes me that these moments of reactivity that we're talking about, like if I self-reflect a little bit, normally that place that I can get to, you know, it doesn't happen so often these days, but it happened with my wife. What it has underneath it is a story. And the story that sits underneath it is an old story, you know. And so for me, that story can be things like, you know, the only person I can rely on is myself, and it always comes back to me, and it's not fair, and blah, 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 which comes back to my childhood trauma of not being held and not being supported. And so it's in a way, what I also recognize that the breath can be very powerful for is as a way to follow the thread and to follow the journey back to what's really going on. Like there's the sort of the surface level reactivity, but then there's something else that's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is where I admire Terry Real's work, because the first thing we need to do is to go to the point of origin, really. If we're going to get to the bottom of this, we've got to go to the point of origin. And I was working with a woman yesterday who had a very rough time in the womb. And she has really strong power of dissociation as a result. She can't concentrate, she can't focus. She's a very literate, intelligent being, emotionally intelligent too, but she just can't put it together. So then we get to look at, okay, what do we do? How can we connect you as you are today as a conscious being? How can we use this 5%, as Bruce Lipton calls it, of our conscious mind to inform the 95% that's in our subconscious archive? And the breath is essential in this for me, in my practice, because if I can get someone to breathe, I can then encourage them to create the level of focus they need. And the journey that we do together, which I call the bridge, is about feeling this in the body. Where is this feeling in the body? And then not even worrying about the trauma itself, because her mum was brutalized when she was in the womb, but taking care of the little one that got injured and reaching out to the little one. And then when that connection is made or even imagined, then being able to offer the succor, the support, the protection, the guarantee that I've got this now. I've found out where you are and I've got you covered. And 9.5 times out of 10, I find people change immediately. And this has worked so successfully for me. But in the beginning, it didn't. They'd come back the next week and they'd say, hey, I know that thing you did. I need to do it again because it's kind of fading. And so the word bridge is actually an acronym for breathe, recognize, investigate the body, have a dialogue with that part of you that you left, that fragment that you left behind. Then once that dialogue has happened, which is the pinnacle moment, then gather that little one back into your own heart. And then the E is an exercise. So what is it, that fragment? Because if you were 3 years old, you can't be intellectual about these things. There's a three-year-old inside you that is begging, desperate, in an airless, stifling condition for love. And it's going to make you do things that you don't really want to do. So it's best you make an alliance with this part of you. You can design whatever alliance you want rather than try ignore it. So that exercise is really about communicating in a way. And this lady today that I worked with said, I remember having a blue dress, and that really, really made me happy, that blue dress. So the exercise I'm going to do is to take my hammock every day and hang it, and I'm going to take something blue with me. And then I'm going to line the hammock and keep writing my book. And so that blue connection is just so simple that to that little one, it can feel included. And it's our commitment to provide that consistency, because repetition is so important for the subconscious that it can be reinformed. As an adult, it's a tough thing to do, but repetition is one way that we can actually achieve it. So that's what I love.
So someone that's watching this, who is recognizing they've got these places in themselves that are disowned. And they can also see that there's history here within their reactions and their reactivity. Obviously, ultimately, to do some of the deeper work around this, working one-on-one or working in a group program is likely to be very helpful. But what are some of the starting points for how someone meets and how someone relates to these inner places? How does one bring a softer and more a relationship to those places that helps open this up?
Yeah. Okay. I think, first of all, to recognize what's going on in your body, use your body intelligence, not just your brain. I think also what we're seeking to do is to create relationship, and that's going to start with tiny steps. So notice when next time that you're activated or you're triggered, even if you react and it all goes pear-shaped and it was an absolute disaster, do a little post-mortem on the experience. You know, just inquire into it. Now, when was it that, you know, what was it I felt? What was really going on? I mean, I know I had to win, or I had to argue, or I had to get angry, or whatever it was, but if I just dwell in there a little bit and bring the breath to this dwelling, because otherwise it can be overwhelming and too scary. So bring your breath and then make an inquiry into the feeling. And then how far back in your life can you remember having that feeling? Because it's not a new feeling. Like you said earlier on, Howard, this can be traced back to things that have happened in the past. So how far back can you remember? And it's important that you acknowledge yourself, even for going through this process. And even if you can only remember back 5 years, that's something. You're starting an inquiry that will live forever. So keep going and give yourself a good pat on the back and some acknowledgement for actually being willing to do this. And eventually you'll be able, and sometimes very quickly, oh gosh, this reminds me of my dad when I was 3 and I would see him hit my mom, and that just made me so angry, but I couldn't say anything. I couldn't say anything. And my belly, and you know, so once you've started that relationship, if you can remember a moment that stimulated the same sensation that you've got, that's the moment you get to work with. And that's actually the person, more importantly than the moment, the person that was subjected to that moment that you need to retrieve. And then there are different ways, like John Baldwin's written a couple of great books. I've got the book, The Bridge, that'll be coming out in the next 2 or 3 weeks, months, we'll see, which is a great little guide and a handbook that you can use. And use the breath also as a conscious connected breath. That's the one that we haven't talked about yet. But if you take these issues into a conscious connected breath, that's very different than the breaths we've described so far. And it is really quite transportative. It's one that slows down frontal lobe activity. It increases the sense of spaciousness in the brain, so the thoughts aren't quite running so fast. And in the space between those thoughts, there's the opportunity to experience a much higher power than us alone, that to be inspired. And so to bring inspiration into a crunch moment or a crunch issue, a toxic relationship or a traumatic issue that you've never been able to resolve, can often in itself create a pivotal moment of release. Yeah, I think there's something that happens when we do a conscious connected breath that's very special, is that we can create sort of a, what would you call a channel, or like a ray or access to the superconscious or the God consciousness, and we're using our conscious will to breathe, and we're also to our subconscious. And when those three are aligned, I remember studying miracles with Richard Bartlett, and he would say, when you're in that position, you should expect nothing. You should have no need, just be present with it. And then you can get reinformed. And it's just like a very quick download, like, oh my God, I get it. something I didn't even think of is now completely clear to me, and I feel completely differently about that issue.
You've been mentioning a conscious connected breath. Do you want to give a little bit more context around that, and then maybe we can do a little taster exercise?
Okay, well, we'll try a conscious connected breath then. I think that's a fun one to do. You need to be sitting down or lying down and not standing up or driving a car, please. And there are certain medical conditions that would not be wise to do it. So those include really anything that you need to see a doctor about, but things like glaucoma, epilepsy, schizophrenia, bipolar, eyes I've done, first term pregnancy, couple of others, heart disease, high blood pressure. That's just about covered it. But if you're concerned, then just keep the recording and then check with your medical practitioner, and then you can do it with me then. I'm just going to put original on so you can hear what I do. You will find it difficult to believe that this is so simple, first of all, as with all breath styles. But I'm going to ask you to breathe to the top of your capacity and then to let go of the breath to a comfortable degree, not to empty out the room completely, the lungs completely, but say, you know, by far the majority, 70 or 80%. And if you're asthmatic, you should do it another way. So don't do it with us now. So it's going to look like this. And then I'll do it and I'll keep doing it. I'll move my hand and I'll just keep going. And you just join me when you're ready. And remember that you need to go all the way to the top. You really need to stretch the top of your lungs and then release. And it will begin, okay? Okay, here goes. Stretching to the top and connecting each breath. No pauses. And watching, listening, noticing. We'll take three more. And really stretching for that last breath. Now, if you just close your eyes, and notice, just notice what's different. Your pulse, maybe you can feel your pulse. Maybe you feel something different in your head. Maybe you feel a little tingling in your fingers. Maybe you feel a little discomfort, a dry throat. A little bit like, well, maybe something I don't want to feel here. Or maybe you just feel like you've done something good for yourself. So when you're ready, you can come back. And I know what you're going to say. Whatever I say, you're going to say, I'd just like to say what it was like for me. So I want to ask you what it was like for you first.
Well, I wanted longer. I've had a kind of busy morning. And as we were doing the breath, I noticed that I was kind of just, everything was kind of becoming more spacious. And then when we stopped, there was just this real sense of just space. And for a moment, I completely forgot that I was hosting an interview. and you started coming back. And I thought, oh, shit, I need to come back and re-engage. But particularly the feeling was just this sense of just wide space, and just a sense of ease. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what you've said there. You've recorded the process of expansion that is happening, because when we connect our breath like that, it's like we go to the edge of our comfort zone. We go to the edge of our consciousness and we realize, oh my gosh, there's something more than I've been settling for. And it's inviting and it's a little bit scary too. And that's why usually we talk all the way or infrequently, but through a breath work to help, especially first timers. And we have music as well to help people to emote more. That helps people let the emotions flow more easily. But, and that's why I stopped also. I have a little anecdote here. I was, when I first started this, I used to work in the corporate world as a younger man, and I, up to my mid 20s, and I've always seen it as like being reluctant recruit in the army. You know, can you consciously object to this kind of existence because it's so soulless, you know? And so it was with glee that I accepted an invitation to go to a company in the center of London to do a breath work at lunch. And I thought, I'm going to blow these people away. And there were only about, it was all the director level stuff. There were about 12 or 15 of them in there. And so we did an hour session at a local yoga studio, and then they went back to work again, but nobody could work. They were just like, contemplating and considering things, and like work doesn't fit. So there's a time for that breath, and there's a time not to do it. But if you can create the space, and especially afterwards, because that breath experience can be very powerful, but really what counts is how can I employ it in between sessions. So we've got some people who come to our, we do Sunday sessions for free every week in the morning and the evening, UK time. And some people come just for the fun and the breath and the high, and others come because of the community, and others come to resource, because if there's resourcing, if this to me is, my belief system says this is the best way, then I can re-approach my life in a more informed way, in a more widely, amply informed way.
So. I also just thinking before we finish, and another good place to just sort of to point this is that I think what can sometimes happen when people are understanding and opening to and exploring their trauma is that it can sometimes become quite a cerebral process, that one can sort of, you know, map things and track things and understand things and talk about things. But of course, to really heal what's happened in our body, we have to have a way of connecting to that. So maybe you can just say a few words about the importance of, in a way, going back to what we talked about around fragmentation, like the importance of moving beyond just kind of thinking about things to actually working in this more integrated way.
Yeah. Thank you. The body wants to lead, you know, in so many ways. The body wants to lead. Athletes, you know, they use the mind to control the body, but then we find that sweet spot, you know, that sweet spot of where I'm actually not doing anything and this is just happening. We're in the flow, we're in the zone. And that also happens with breath work. And it happens when we don't expect it and when we don't need it. If expectation and need will repel those kinds of possibilities. But I think when it comes to retrieving fragmented bits, we need to understand that the body has a physical cellular record of everything that's ever happened to us. And we think the brain is our main tool, but the body is, I found working with the felt sense and something that I've developed called felt presence, which is burrowing into whatever that feeling is in your body, in going into nano focus, like you're taking this whole huge mind of yours and employing it to really zoom in on one tiny sensation in your body. What happens is your awareness all of a sudden pops and you leave these repetitive thoughts, and the body then gifts you with the information that it's carrying for you. And that's one of the things I really encourage people to do during a breath work is listen to your body. My wife was a therapist when I first met her, and I had a session with her. And the first thing she told me was, God speaks to you through your body. Are you willing to listen? And I was like, God, okay, you know. But actually, it's proven to me to be true over several years that I can abstain from all of these entrenching, repetitive, dangerous, habitual, nasty, low energy thoughts, go into my body with a breath work and come out a completely different being. that's from a traumatic reawakening or from the trauma itself, or if you don't feel creative, or if you're just too stressed, anything like that at all. This is like those old drawings they used to have back in the 60s where you could draw on this thing and then you this little machine, you could draw pictures on it and you'd shake it and the whole picture would disappear and then you could draw another one. It's like cleaning the screen, screen cleaner. And that's because we listen to our body. So those fragments become our informers. And when we move into the role of conducting that orchestra, there are flutes and bassoons and guitars and pianos and the most heavenly harps, the most incredible synthesis and the incredible synergy and the unity of our inner orchestra, which can just make you want to sing, sing with joy.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Anthony, for people that want to find out more about you and your work, tell us where they can go and also what they can find.
Yeah, please come to alchemyofbreath.com. That's our main international website. Alchemyofbreath.com will bring you to our Sunday breathes. We have a ceremonial breathe in the evening every Tuesday also, which is free. And you can learn more about us and the do's and don'ts of breathwork. And it's a great way to meet community. Also, if you go to asha.global, that's our land-based center, which is the teaching center for alchemy, where the community gathers. We have about 80 people there right now who are in a breath camp, which is where we come together and breathe twice a day for 10 days straight. And oh my goodness, there'll be no cobwebs after you've done that. All your tubes and channels will be wonderfully clean. So you can look at us and find out really what we're up to on both of those.
Amazing. Anthony, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Howard. Thanks to every one of you, and may the breath become your best friend.